Brings number 25, ice fishing access. Jake, you're going to do this one too?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will be doing this. Again, Jake Davis, Fisheries Program Administrator. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. So this topic is quite timely again with the temps that we're seeing. We're getting to that hard water period, and we've been in it actually for a period of time. But it is important to talk about, as I mentioned in the Aquatic Invasive Species presentation, the high numbers of waters, the high number of access areas that we have. Well, that's important in the hard water time as well. We have a lot of passionate ice anglers in the state, a lot of passionate ice anglers that come to this state, and we want to provide access to the great resources that we have. This is a sport that we're seeing increasing trends, and so with that, we want to make sure that we're getting people safely to those water bodies. So our winter access, in this case here, you can see a northeastern South Dakota lake with, if you want to call it, a small city on it. It's quite frequent scene. Ice fishing does offer a lot of opportunities for folks, say folks that don't have a watercraft. Ice provides access to certain bodies of the water, parts of a lake or system that they may not get to from shore. Does provide some unique opportunities, and also we'll talk about it, but you can see we've got vehicles out there, we've got ATVs, there's probably people just foot traffic with sled. There's a lot of different ways that folks access water bodies during this time of year that we have to account for. So just to give you a quick overview of what we're going to talk about, statewide regional breakdown as far as access areas that are maintained by GFP and partners, the partners that are actually the ones helping us, the challenges that are associated with ice fishing access, but then also the opportunities that we see. So basically across the state, we have 173 locations that we provide access at. It is somewhat of a moving target every year depending on what conditions are like, but Region 1, which is Western South Dakota, there's 22 locations. Region 2, Central South Dakota, we've got 53, 33, and 65, and 3 and 4 on the eastern side, respectively. But again, the big thing is it's a high number of access areas, and depending on what the conditions might be, if we have a storm that impacts a certain part of the state, for example, that's a lot of access areas that we may have to get to in a short amount of time because there was a high number that were impacted. Ways that we do it, we have internal staff, internal partnerships. This is a good really showing of the teamwork that can happen within GFP to keep access open. We utilize park staff, habitat, terrestrial, aquatic, really all of them can play a part in winter access and keeping those systems open. The ways that we do it, we've got specialized equipment. Certainly snow plows are an easy one to think of, but I can tell you, for example, we just purchased some new equipment for some staff that included a skid steer and a snow plow attachment for it, primarily looking at ice fishing access. So again, we can purchase special equipment that helps with this, but looking internally at what we have, it's not just, you know, certainly one effort by one discipline. And then also external. We have a lot of partners that might be very close to certain water bodies, have that special equipment, and might be out there already. You think about a snow plow that's doing a highway or a county road or something. We can partner with them to hit an access area as well to get people to that water body in that parking area. So we have contracts, partnerships with city municipalities, county, township, federal as well, such as U.S. Forest Service. And then also we do utilize private contractors. Really, it's just whatever situation fits best. And we think about that number of access areas, what other entities might be closer already out there. It's just easier for them to work with us versus us just going out and doing it. So we do have a lot of those partnerships in place. Now, just to cover some of the challenges here, it's just going to be a lot of pictures because if anybody's been around a lot of frozen water bodies, that ice can cause havoc at times. Ice heaves, things like that. But Mother Nature is usually the one that provides those challenges. I'm looking at the forecast next week and the snow that's coming from the hills, and I'm thinking I might not be coming to pier next week. With that, that also impacts access. But wind and snow, when you get a snow event and you get winds the following day or two, there's times that you clear an access, so you'd have to come back the next day and clear it again, which we do. But it's a dynamic system. Also locations. We've got some water bodies that are quite remote, a long way from offices, and some of them have long stretches of road that we would need to plow essentially just to get to that water body. So there are challenges there. And again, changing conditions. Different forms of ice heaves caused by wind, temperature changes. We've got slush areas, road conditions, filling reservoirs where essentially the edges are always soft because that ice is being pushed up as the reservoir fills. But again, a lot of different things that we're dealing with, and these can change quite frequently. So some of these challenges here, not only that, I mentioned what Mother Nature can do, but also the expectations of our users. I mentioned the multiple ways that people access these fisheries, and so we have to provide as best as we can. So anything foot traffic, snowmobiles, all the way down to vehicles towing a $50,000 or $60,000 ice shack. The expectation is still there that they can get to that water body at times. So again, we have a really broad spectrum of users and the ways that they get there. And then also trying to predict angling pressure. For example, we know a few that are just going to be consistent, but there's certainly times where there's a hot bite and we can see intense pressure for a short period of time until that bite goes away and people move. But all of a sudden, the expectation on a certain water body might change in a very short time. And with that, parking can always be an issue because a hot bite, for example, might bring a lot of anglers in, and we may not have been preparing for that, or couldn't be, because you just never know where it might have hit. But just to talk about some pictures, just to show what staff deal with on a regular basis. This is a picture of an ice heave here. You can see there's some sled tracks going over the top. So I mentioned if you're a foot angler, an angler on foot, you're all right here. I don't think you're going to get your ice castle through that, though. So, I mean, there are things that happen and change. So this is an example of a nearshore ice heave. We've got another just picture here of what our staff are dealing with to try and clear. So essentially, this is what it would look like after it's been cleared out. It's kind of hard to see with everything being white, but there's that ice being pushed up is gone. Snow removal, again, I mentioned you get snow event with some winds for several days, and it might take several days worth of clearing just because you clear it open, and it might blow shut again. And then parking. Here's an example of a hot bite. As you can see, that really constricts traffic. And we've got not just trucks, we've got trailers, we've got all kinds of things in there that we need to account for. But when we look at that, it's all about the opportunities as well, because ice fishing is a very popular sport. Really been engaging users at our outdoor campuses, and we've just seen increased participation. Providing that access is important. Meeting those expectations, we do it the best we can for the purposes that are out there. And with that, we're seeing increased participation in a different number of ways, whether that's foot traffic or, again, large permanent ice shacks, but meeting those expectations where we can. And then our partnerships, being proactive, increasing cooperation internally and externally, and doing what we can to promote the sport. The big thing is just getting people to that resource safely and as best we can at those 173 access areas. And with that, quick rundown, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Jake? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Commissioner Bartling here. Jake, how far out onto the ice does the staff go as far as to clear it and whatnot? And I guess the reason I'm asking is, you know, the Missouri River is what I'm, of course, referring to, but the water level is so low, and, you know, is there a lot of stability on the edge of that ice right now as far as getting people out there?
Through the chair. Commissioner Bartling, so what our staff is going to do is get people to the ice. After that, we don't do any ice roads or anything that way. Now, I grew up in northern Minnesota and can think of a lot of examples, Lake of the Woods, Red Lake, where you've got street signs out there and mini cities and things. But our system can be very dynamic. So with that, we just essentially clear access to it. Yep.
Any other questions? Remind me, just it seemed like a few years ago, did we change it so, like, if you're out on the ice, can you clean or process or eat fish while you're out there fishing? Because I know I get that every year. Somebody's like, am I going to get in trouble if we're out here and we deep fat fry some of these? And I said, I just make up the rules. I don't remember. So,
yeah. Mr. Chair, yes, we did allow that. Now, it doesn't apply to certain waters that may have length-specific regulations to it, and they do count against your daily limit. You need to still keep the entrails and everything, but yes, we have provided that opportunity.